Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Second Chance in Paradise by Jennifer Peele. Narrated by Stephanie Kay. 1. I hesitated to click on his Facebook profile page. I had resisted for an entire month. This time, it was a record for me. Not one I was necessarily proud of. I shouldn't care what Porter Claiborne was up to. It had been over 7.5 years since I'd last seen him. And my, let's say, unhealthy habit didn't start until a few years ago, when I stumbled across his vlog by accident. Okay, so I'd searched for him. I knew it wasn't a good thing. I was too smart to keep this up, whatever it was. I wasn't obsessed. Like I said, it was an accident. Don't do it, Holland. My cursor danced around his handsome face. What was he, 29 now? Don't pretend like you don't know. His birthday was last month, February 18th. My brain was filled with useless bits of information I should have forgotten. Don't click. Resist. I stared into those eyes that looked like pools of crystal clear water, deep and alive. They were offset by his playful smile that said, "I'm trouble." And he was. From following his vlog, I knew that hadn't changed. His life was one big party, just how he liked it. Now he got paid for it. I could hear him now, gloating over it. If we ever managed to see each other again, which was highly improbable. He was living the high life in Lake Tahoe, of all places, while I was living out my dream in Mobile. An odd place to live out your dreams, but sometimes you had to make the best of where you could afford to land. I looked around the lab from my large office window and smiled at all the diagnostic equipment and apparatuses working at a low hum. Yep, I was living the dream. By myself, at 6 in the morning, running yet another round of DNA sequencing. As a doctoral student, I lived in the lab more than my cramped apartment, surviving on the university's stipend. But it would all be worth it. In 2 years, I could write my own ticket upon receiving my PhD in pharmacology. And more importantly, figure out a better way to treat cardiovascular disease and hopefully save some lives. It was going to happen. I was confident. Mostly. I focused back on Porter while I waited for my sequencing report. In every aspect of our lives, we were different. He came from a loving family, whether he thought so or not, with the kind of stability and means I could only dream of. Me? I came from the kind of life that played out in tragic news stories or made-for-TV movies. But I was determined to write my own ending. But for the year between my 17th and 18th birthdays, it hadn't mattered I was the girl from the wrong side of any town, a mere employee of his parents' resort, making barely over minimum wage during school breaks and holidays. Porter only saw me, Holland Reeves. It was my name that initially drew him in, which is the only thing halfway interesting about me. Other than my parents being felons, I was about as boring as they come. Somehow, Porter saw past that. He got me to do things I still both cringed about and relived as the best times of my life. Like sneaking into the resort's pools after they closed, both the indoor and outdoor ones, as well as the hot tubs. Or paddleboarding in the middle of the night in the Gulf. So dangerous! So stupid! So romantic. What did an 18 and 21-year-old know about romance? I should have known to stay away. I was a walk-the-line kind of girl. Veering outside the lines only caused me to get hit by oncoming traffic. A big semi-truck by the name of Demi. Beautiful Demi with eyes of velvet brown the body of a goddess, and the kind of money that allowed her to stay at the Claiborne instead of work there. The kiss and her bikini that showed all she had to offer was nothing compared to the relief in Porter's eyes when I caught them at our spot. I don't know why I considered it our spot. A hammock between two palm trees on the outskirts of the Claiborne property and his family's bungalow. Twice. We had used it twice. Each time, I never wanted to leave his arms or the feel of his bare chest. He made me feel like I existed for more than just myself. I held my stomach. I still felt sick over seeing them together, and his look of relief. Maybe if he had known how I really felt, if I had been brave enough to admit I loved him, if I had reciprocated those three words he had been so generous with. But then I saw the weight physically lift off his shoulders when I caught him with Demi. I was too late. He could finally tell me the truth without saying a word. He was over me. How could I blame him? Not for the cheating. That was uncalled for. He could have told me the truth. I would have understood. I expected it after all the times I never told him what he wanted to hear. I wanted to tell him. More than anything, I wanted him to know what he meant to me. What it meant that he loved me when no one ever had. But I didn't even know enough about love to know I was in love. By the time I figured it out, it was too late. Or maybe it was just me. Those who were supposed to love me had even managed to fail me. Thinking back, deep down, I knew it wouldn't last. He acted different our last summer together. It was nothing like the first one. The one where Porter couldn't spend enough time with me. No, that last summer, something had changed. I felt the distance even when we were together, except for the nights in the hammock, or when we laid out under the stars among the dunes. I asked him a dozen times if he wanted to break up with me. Each time, he would stop and think before shaking his head no. But his eyes told a different story. Even when he said he loved me, I could hear the goodbye. I should have broken up with him, but once you had a taste of love, you never wanted to let it go. And more than anything, I wanted to feel what I'd been missing my entire life. If I'd acted as smart as my IQ suggested, I would have admitted the truth and walked away. But my heart knew it would have ached either way. He was the only person who'd ever successfully persuaded my heart to overrule my brain. He still could. I let out a heavy breath and clicked on his profile. Why, Holland? I scrolled through his timeline, thinking I would see the links to his weekly vlog and several posts, front and center like always, touting the resort he worked for in Tahoe. Instead, there were several throwback pictures of when I knew him. He was reminiscing about home. The caption read, "Best summer ever." Mine too. The caption and pictures took me off guard. How could that have been his favorite summer? I had seen several pictures and posts featuring his recent summers. He was having more than a good time in them. Parties galore, and beautiful, sometimes famous, people filled each photo. And not once in all the years I had checked in on him, Facebook stalking seemed too dramatic. Or was that unhealthy? Had I ever once seen a post about his life in Alabama or his family? That wasn't surprising, considering he had spoken heavily of breaking free from the family business and his parents' expectations of him finishing school. I thought he was crazy. To have a family willing and able to pay for school and a ready-made fortune waiting to be assumed were the types of things filling my wildest fantasies. Interestingly enough, he had wound up at a resort. Maybe being the social media director and face of the resort was less pressure. Or maybe he liked the mountains better than the beach. Or perhaps he didn't mind taking direction from someone who wasn't his parent. I touched the photo on the screen. It was taken the summer we met. The golden, sun-kissed man, who'd had hints of a boy in his eyes, with dark, flippy hair, could still send flutters through me. In the photo, he was playing volleyball on the beach at sunset. The first time I saw him was on that beach. He was catching rays while I was setting up umbrellas and lounge chairs for guests. I'd stared blankly at his toned chest as he asked me what my name was. He laughed and approached me to look at my name tag. That's where it all began. I sat back in my office chair and sighed, never taking my eyes off the picture. We shouldn't have dated. It was against the rules. Working for his family meant I was off limits. His parents, technically his dad and stepmom, had a rule against him dating employees. Beau and Natalie Claiborne were the nicest people I had ever known. One of the few decent things my uncle and legal guardian ever did was helping me secure a job with his old acquaintance, Beau Claiborne. It was probably more to get me out of the way, but no matter how cold and indifferent my aunt and uncle were after taking me in, I would always thank Uncle Stan for my job at the Claiborne. Literally in paradise. Paradise, Alabama, that is. A tiny piece of heaven in the Gulf of Mexico. I did everything. Cleaning rooms, serving food, washing dishes, and taking care of guests on the beach. My second and last summer with them, I helped run the souvenir shop on the property. That first summer, Porter followed me around, pretending to check on my work or teasing me about my name. He was kind of cocky, pointing out if I ever missed a spot on a dish or a streak on a mirror. But those interactions soon turned into him showing me the best place to eat lunch, down by the wharf, near the marina on the Gulf. We spent many lunch hours there, dipping our toes in the water and talking about everything, from our favorite subjects in school to what we wanted to be when we grew up. Or, in his case, what he didn't want to be, the owner and operator of the Claiborne. Lunch breaks turned into him convincing me to stay after hours. It's not like anyone cared if I came home, but I hated breaking his parents' rules. I never even colored outside of the lines as a child. Porter never stayed in them. I sat up and scrolled to the next photo. He was holding up a fish he'd caught on his family's boat. How many times had we snuck out on that thing? Probably more than we should have. I hated the sneaking around, but Porter was good at it, and some other things, too. I felt a tingle of a memory on my neck. One of his lips' favorite landing spots. I rubbed my neck and clicked on the next picture. There he stood with his parents and his sister Charlotte, who was 9 at the time, in front of the Claiborne sign that stood majestically at the entrance of the resort, in front of the gorgeous water wall made of terracotta granite. They were a handsome family. Another twinge of guilt pricked me. I hated lying to his parents. They were good to work for, and even better people. The kind of people that always went out of the way to make their guests feel like they were at home, and their employees like they were part of the family. They were especially kind to me. I remember Mrs. Claiborne always asked if I was happy, and if she could do anything for me. I found it odd that she cared. Even odder were the feelings of happiness I felt during those summers. For the first time in my life, I'd felt free enough to allow myself the luxury of happiness. I let my guard down so much, I began to naively dream that one day I would trade Holland Reeves in for Holland Claiborne. For someone so smart, I was sure dumb, at least when it came to Porter. I didn't know if his parents ever found out I had broken their rule. It still killed me to think I violated their trust. Especially since they gave me a nice bonus to use for school at the end of that summer, when I woke up from one dream and left to pursue the one I was chasing now. I was getting there slowly but surely. I already had my undergraduate degree in molecular biology and a master's in chemistry. Someday, a doctorate in pharmacology. I blew enough air out to ruffle my bangs. I wasn't even sure why I kept a Facebook page. I had very few friends on the site, and even fewer in real life. My only posts were links to scientific journal articles I found insightful, or links to when I got published in them. The highlights of my life. I needed to quit torturing myself. I scrolled down far enough in Porter's feed to where I could remind myself he dated models and even a B-list actress that did made-for-TV movies. He hung out with the rich and famous. I couldn't believe how many pictures there were of him in a tux. That wasn't the man I knew. The man I knew wore cargo shorts and t-shirts, or swim trunks, his favorite article of clothing. He looked great, but it wasn't him. At least not my version of him. But that guy didn't exist anymore. Maybe he never had. Maybe he was never mine. I stared at several pictures of beautiful women draped all over him, or kissing his cheeks and taking a selfie. I laughed at the thought of him taking a selfie. I would have thought the Alabama boy in him would have objected, but the women were extremely attractive. I doubted he was thinking with his brain. I caught my reflection in my laptop screen. I could see my tired green eyes and pulled up damp strawberry blonde hair. The white lab coat was a far cry from an evening gown, or those cute snow bunny outfits his girlfriends over the years had worn. I hadn't even bothered with makeup today. It's not that I didn't care about my appearance, but I was busy. "I shaved my legs today," I said out loud to make myself feel better. In my final act of torture, I watched the last vlog he posted a few weeks ago. I clicked play, and there he was out in the brilliant white snow, surrounded by awe-inspiring mountain peaks lined with ski lifts. He was giving his report on the excellent ski conditions and all the newly fallen powder. I noticed he looked tired, too. He wasn't his enthusiastic self. In fact, he hadn't been the last couple of times I'd watched his vlogs. He was still handsome. His dark hair was cut close on the sides and longer on the top. Long gone was the flippy mop. You could tell he had been enjoying the powder himself. His face was tan, except for the outline of his ski goggles. The stubble and raccoon eyes worked for him. But his eyes were like mine, worn. Maybe he was burning the candle on both ends, partying. He must have been exhausted because his southern accent slipped in. He usually steered clear of his southern roots. "Y'all make sure, I mean, you don't want to miss our buy two, get one half price lift tickets on sale now." I wondered why he was trying to hide who he was. Surely he wasn't ashamed. He came from a well-bred family full of manners, charm, and money. He was lucky. I don't think he ever knew how lucky he was. I tapped my fingers on my desk. Why was he unhappy? Stop it, Holland! First loves were never meant to last. You must have a first to have a last. Someday I would get there. Or perhaps love was never meant to last. Did I even know how to love? I loved my work. I was married to the lab now. It wasn't a complaint, but it was lonely, even when I wasn't the only one there. I talked to and mentored several grad students a day, but I never found the same connections I had once upon a time in paradise. Not only had I found Porter there, but JC, too. We worked almost every shift together. She became my confidant, Porter enabler, and friend. But when I let paradise go, she had to go too. At the time, it seemed like cutting all ties was the best thing to do. It was what my family, if you could call them that, taught me. Nothing lasted forever. I had to depend on myself. And that's exactly what I was going to continue doing. I sighed and vowed once again to never check in on his life. I was getting ready to click out of the site when a new post showed up. And it included me. I felt as if someone had doused me in lidocaine. I was numb from head to toe. I fixated on the only photo that existed of our time together so long ago. JC had taken it with Porter's phone. We looked so young, and I looked ridiculous, while he looked perfect. I was sitting on his lap while he kissed my cheek. My eyes were closed. I was giggling because before the sweet kiss on the cheek, he had been giving me playful kisses and making obnoxious sounds against my skin. Some feelings surfaced, and I touched the screen. We looked so happy. Then I noticed the caption, "Best girl ever." It was as if the room had become a vacuum-sealed pack. There was no air, no words to describe the shock. Maybe he was intoxicated. Why else would he lie like that? Or maybe he posted the wrong picture. Surely he meant one of his snow goddesses. Regardless, this was all a mistake. I grabbed my mouse. We were ancient history like the Kenyanthropus, a 3.3 million-year-old skull. Okay, maybe not that old, but my time with him felt like eons ago. Sometimes I wondered if it ever happened. But there was the photographic evidence staring back at me. No more. I exited the site. This was the last time. I meant it this time. I sat in my chair and closed my eyes. What a life I had made for myself. Checking in on an old boyfriend before the crack of dawn. I sighed. For the first time in a long time, I felt like maybe I needed something more in my life than memories. 2. I trudged up the stairs to my tiny one-bedroom apartment several blocks from campus. I was so exhausted, I wasn't sure how I found the energy to make it up each step. But I wasn't going to question it, mainly because I was too tired. Another 14-hour day in the lab. In a couple of weeks, it would be spring break, so I would get a small reprieve while the grad students I mentored would be gone. Not that I wouldn't go in over break, but I would make myself take off Easter Sunday. Right? Yes. Yes, no working on Easter. I would sleep. That sounded like heaven right about now. I shifted my backpack and made the rest of the climb up the dark, dingy stairwell. University stipends weren't that much, and I was tired of roommates, so my accommodations were on the questionable side. Rent wasn't cheap in Mobile, but at least my apartment was always clean, and I didn't have to worry about the weird men my roommates would bring home. So maybe I always had my pepper spray on the ready and was now a world champion bug killer. It was worth it. Most days. I fizzled into my overstuffed chair. The green one, not the red one. I didn't have to decorate last Christmas. It was the only time of year I felt good about my mismatched furniture. I got them cheap. We are talking a deep, deep discount. And it's not like I ever had company. There wasn't a lot of room for it. My life fit in 500 square feet of tiled floor, whitewashed walls, and low lighting. I called it mood lighting, you know, for researching and sleeping, because that's all this apartment ever saw. Heavy on the research. My thesis was going to be a masterpiece. The committee that held my life in their hands would cry in a couple of years when they got that baby. For now, I was the one in tears as I dedicated my life to it. I didn't even have the energy to take off my jacket. It was probably a good call. I kept the furnace down to semi-Arctic levels to save on heating bills. Mobile could get cold even in March. My stomach and mind were at war. My body was begging for rest and food. 15 minutes, my mind implored. I closed my eyes. Yes, all I needed was 15 minutes. I kicked off my shoes in a semi-coma and curled up on the chair. I don't remember anything after that. I fell into a deep sleep for 15 minutes, times 12. It was midnight. My stomach wasn't happy, making noises that sounded like a koala barking. A disturbing sound, to be sure. I only knew this because watching National Geographic videos online was my prime source of entertainment when I had the time, which was almost never. I pushed myself up and headed for the kitchen, or what I liked to call my play kitchen. I think I could have bought a bigger one at a children's toy store. I didn't even know they made refrigerators so slender. No creepy men, though, I reminded myself. Or slob roommates who were noisy and interrupted my studies. I reached in the refrigerator and grabbed one of my pre-made meals, steel-cut oatmeal in a jar. I normally ate them for breakfast, but cooking was out of the question, and it was healthy, full of fruit, nuts, and almond milk. In my line of study, you learned to eat right was the first step in disease prevention. I wasn't perfect at it, but I made a conscious effort. So maybe there was a package of peanut butter cups lurking somewhere in a cupboard. Some days a girl needed a fix. Not today, though. I devoured the oatmeal and stumbled into my cubicle of a bedroom. I didn't even bother undressing. I fell on my twin-size bed, jacket and all, threw my comforter over me, slept, woke up at the crack of dawn, and started the process all over. The only difference was I reminded myself I could be a woman, too. I threw on some mascara and lip gloss just for fun. I looked in the small mirror above the ancient sink that had rust lining the faucet. Once upon a time, someone called me beautiful. I couldn't say his name or think about it, especially after that picture he posted, clearly by mistake. Instead, I looked harder. All I could see were the red lines in my eyes reminding me I was still tired, and hair that begged to be styled again. Sorry, I threw it up in a messy bun. At least my legs were still smooth, not that you could tell underneath the layer of tights and jeans. It was cold at home and at the lab. I threw a few protein bars, apples, and a banana in my backpack before heading out into the cool morning. I walked wherever I could. My old Honda Accord had seen better days, like 2 decades ago, but it was still running. I saved Lola for special occasions. I thought naming her would help us be friends more than adversaries. On my way out, I stopped by the mailboxes. I hadn't had the energy last night to check for mail. It was usually only bills. I turned the small key and opened the tiny metal door, surprised to see some color in there. A shiny gold envelope consumed the space. That and the electric bill. Curious, I grabbed the card. I realized then how truly lonely my life had become. I shouldn't have been so happy by the prospect that someone other than the utility company cared to send me anything. There was no one to blame but me. School, work, and research had become my life. I helped people, I reminded myself, but I didn't let them in. Life experience taught me not to trust easily. The only time I had, it hadn't worked out so well. The beautiful script on the envelope was printed. My name never looked so fancy. There was no return address. My hopes of being remembered faded. It was probably my insurance agent thanking me for my small contribution to his Maui vacation, or perhaps begging me to buy life insurance, like I had any beneficiaries or money to spend on a premium. The only reason I insured Lola was because it was the law. I opened the envelope anyway. It contained a card and a letter. Not just any card, but an announcement. I stood in the drafty hall and stared at the beautiful JC and her fiancé, George Buchanan. I grinned.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?